So everyone, welcome to the Region 6 Planning and Policy Council meeting. My name's Kirby Fye with the department. If you joined via computer, I'm under Amy Holland. I'm signed in under her name, but this is Kirby. Just a few housekeeping things before we get into attendance. Just a reminder, since this is a virtual meeting, please make sure your computer or your phone, depending on how you join the meeting, are muted if you're not talking, just to prevent the feedback from coming through. Also, since or per Governor Lee's Executive Order 60, this meeting will be recorded and posted to the department website. So just wanted to let you all know that. I'll go ahead and get started with attendance. And I'm going to read through the names that have joined via computer, and then we'll get to the individuals who have called in. So, like I said, this is Kirby Fye with the department. I see Avis Easley with the department is here. Jerry Moore is here. Kubra Urkel Bryant is here. Kurt Hipple. Lori Hendon. Lori Rash. Mary Linden. Matt Marshall. Richard Burr, Roger Jowers, Sarah Mays, Sabrina, what's your last name, Sabrina?
Good afternoon, Anderson.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And I see a few individuals who have called in. If you don't mind to please state your name.
Kayla Starnes with Professional Care Services.
Hi, Kayla.
Dana Cobb, Commissioner.
Dana Cobb. Hi, Dana.
Cameron Hurt, DRT.
Richard, I want to let you know, Cameron is actually with Disability Rights Tennessee. He will be replacing, I'm getting a lot of feedback. You're not muted, please mute your phone. Okay.
Kirby, I didn't understand what you just said.
I was getting a lot of feedback.
Okay.
If we could just have all the phones muted or computers. Okay. Cameron is actually replacing Monique Moore on the council. Monique will be dedicating her time to the Region 7 Planning and Policy Council. So Cameron, welcome to the council. Richard, I've sent him a membership application that he'll fill out, and as soon as I receive it, I'll send it your way. Is there anyone I missed for attendance? Sorry, my dog's, here she goes. Okay. Well, Richard, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Thank you, Kirby. First off, I want to just welcome everybody for taking time out today. I know, I can't wait until we can all get together again, and not just for the meeting, but for the fellowship, to see everybody and exchange ideas and just catch up with everybody. And hopefully, that's around the corner pretty soon. So welcome to everybody and thanks. I do want to start the meeting because, with new people coming on from time to time, maybe they've heard about the Region 6 Planning and Council meeting or the statewide policy and planning committees. But I do want to read the purpose from the Regional Planning and Policy Council's operational guidelines. This is our purpose of these meetings. The Regional Planning and Policy Councils were created to assist the Tennessee Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services in planning a comprehensive array of high-quality prevention, early intervention, treatment services, and supports, and to advise the department on policy, budget requests, developing and evaluating services, and supports for persons with mental illness, serious emotional disturbances, and substance use disorders. And that's what we're here today to do. We meet each quarter, the second Tuesday of each quarter. And So we'll get started with what we're charged with today. And I think first on the agenda is, Kirby, the department report. Or no, we got July meeting minutes. Now, I did get an email from Kirby that Tanya evidently has had a computer crash. So we didn't get the July meeting minutes. Hopefully, we're going to be able to salvage those at some point, and we'll get them out to you just as quick as we can.
Yeah, she had a computer, but she wasn't able to turn them out. So hopefully soon, as soon as we get them, we'll share them with all of you so you can vote on them.
Okay, thank you. So now we'll move on to the department report. Kirby, who's going to furnish that today?
That'll be me.
All right, you go, girl.
All right. I'm getting a lot of feedback. Oh, why? Hold on one second. Let me see here. Let's see if I can get. Okay, sorry about that. All right. So, just a few updates since we last met. I can't believe this is our third virtual meeting since the pandemic started. I feel like we're all pros now with WebEx and virtual meetings. So, just a few updates. Richard, I'm going to send this your way via email so you can attach it to your minutes, because there's a few links in here that individuals may want to click on for more information. Year two of the FY 2021 three-year plan is in progress. We had a few additions to it within the last week, so hopefully we'll be able to get that out to you all to review within the coming weeks. The FY 2021 mental health block grant application was submitted to SAMHSA on August 13th. The FY 2021 mental health block grant report is in progress. Regional councils will also have an opportunity to review that in the coming weeks as well. The department and its community mental health provider partners are excited to expand the state's behavioral health safety net to uninsured children. The program offers an array of essential mental health services for uninsured Tennesseans, children aged 3 to 17. Services are available for family incomes at or below 138% federal poverty level. Governor Bill Lee and the Tennessee General Assembly appropriated $7.6 million in new state funding in the current fiscal year to create the Children's Behavioral Safety Net. Services available through the Children's Behavioral Safety Net include assessment and evaluation, individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy, case management, transportation, family support services, medication management, and pharmacy assistance and coordination. A total of 14 community health centers with 136 locations statewide are participating in this program. I've included a link that you can click on. It's on our department website, but I'll also have the link in this update that if you click on it, it'll show you where a children's behavioral health safety net provider is in your area. The department is expanding its school-based behavioral health liaison program to all 95 counties in the state. Governor Bill Lee budgeted and the Tennessee General Assembly appropriated an increase of $3 million for the current fiscal year to expand the program. School-based behavioral health liaisons provide face-to-face consultation with classroom teachers who enhance learning environments for children who have or are at risk for serious emotional disturbance, behavioral problems, or substance use disorders. Liaisons also provide training and education for classroom teachers and serve as a link between schools and families. Liaisons currently serve elementary, middle, and high schools in 36 Tennessee counties. In state fiscal year 2020, which ended June 30th, liaisons served about 7,500 children, youth, and 2,500 teachers. Liaisons also held more than 11,000 individual counseling sessions and 7,300 individual consultations. The Tennessee Recovery Navigators are celebrating two successful years of connecting people who come into emergency rooms with treatment for substance use disorder. Navigators are people with lived experience of addiction and at least 2 years in recovery who are able to use their history to relate to the patients they meet. Since the program started in June 2018, the Tennessee Recovery Navigators have interfaced with 3,776 people in emergency rooms. In FY 2020, 77% of the patients who met with a navigator were placed into treatment. Navigators are employed by 8 community agencies spread across the state. In 2 years, the reach of the program has grown to 38 hospitals in 21 Tennessee counties. When it began, the program focused on emergency room patients who survived an opioid overdose. As it grew, the program's scope expanded to include people presenting in active withdrawal or with substance use disorder as a primary diagnosis. A new report published by the department details successes of the Tennessee Recovery Navigator Program. It includes testimonials and shows data collected. This report is available on the department website at www.tn.gov/recoverynavigators. The link's also included in this update. Excuse me. On October 1st, 2020, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, through the Health Resources and Services Administration, announced $20 billion in new funding for providers on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. Under this Phase 3 general distribution allocation, providers that have already received provider relief fund payments will be invited to apply for additional funding that considers financial losses and changes in operating expenses caused by the coronavirus. Previously ineligible providers, such as those who began practicing in 2020, will also be invited to apply, and an expanded group of behavioral health providers confronting the emergence of increased mental health and substance use issues exacerbated by the pandemic will also be eligible for relief payments. The deadline for applications is Friday, November 6, 2020. I have a link in the update that you can click on that shows you how to apply for these funds. It's located on the website, the Health and Human Services website, which is www.hhs.gov. And last but not least, I just got this announcement a few minutes before this meeting. So I'm going to read this to you. Hold on. Just came out. The department has secured an additional $7.2 million in federal grant funding to respond to mental health and addiction concerns caused by COVID-19 and recent natural disasters. The federal, SAMHSA has awarded the department an additional $3.5 million to continue to address mental health concerns caused by COVID-19. This funding supplements a previous grant of almost $1 million. Crisis counseling services through this program are available in all 95 counties. SAMHSA also awarded the department $3.7 million to respond to the mental health effects of flooding in 2019. In February and March 2019, 59 Tennessee counties sustained significant damage from severe weather, and FEMA responded with a disaster declaration. Funding under this grant will support mental health crisis services, behavioral health safety net services, and substance abuse treatment and recovery services. And Richard, I'll go ahead and forward you this news release that you can share with your council members as well. And it will also be in my update. And that's what I have.
Thank you, Kirby. We appreciate that. Appreciate the department.
You're welcome.
I'm still playing with buttons here. Jerry, I didn't know if you or Megan were going to give the children committee reports. I'll just defer to you.
We don't have much to update right now because we have not had a meet at all from working from home. TTY's been working from home since March. So we've been doing everything virtual. So I know Megan has been just as busy as I have, so because Suicide Prevention Month was last month, so there's been a lot of the conferences that went on last month, and Megan won Southwest Regional Award at the Southwest Suicide Prevention Conference, and then TCCY won the statewide award for Community Partner. So we've been sort of busy.
Congratulations.
So something TCCY has been doing is we've been doing these virtual conferences. We've had 11 so far. We've had over 6,000 people attend them, and it's stretched beyond Tennessee. So our virtual conferences have had not only folks from Tennessee, but we've had over 32 other states represented, and we've had over 12 other countries that joined in on our virtual conferences. So, and we've had topics for BSB, trauma, domestic violence, race equity, all sorts of topics that we've had during that time. So COVID has not slowed us down. We've just been really, really, really busy doing everything from at home virtually.
Thanks, Jerry. And I guess maybe that's, if you're looking for a brighter side, I guess with the COVID thing, one of the things it has done is kind of acclimate people to virtual meetings, and has really kind of spread out what we can do. Now, I don't think it takes the place of what we do in person and the relationships we can build, but certainly, as you just pointed out, it does kind of broaden what we can do. We actually haven't had a Region 6 adult committee report. I will give just a brief overview of the state's adult committee meeting, and it was mostly the Creating Homes Initiative, CHI and CHI 2. We've got Jason Postlewaite with us that will present the Reach 6 CHI 2 program before we close today. So I won't stay on that very long. And then there were some updates for COVID. And that's really what, and that was on July 15th. There will be an adult committee meeting tomorrow, a statewide meeting, adult committees, tomorrow at sometime. I got it somewhere.
10 a.m., Richard.
I knew you had me, Kirby.
And we'll have Monty Burks. He'll be there talking about faith-based initiatives.
Good deal. Thanks, Kirby. We didn't have the legislative report on the agenda, but I would like to touch on it quickly. The legislative committee met August the 20th. Zach Blair gave a report. Y'all know we didn't have it on this quarter's agenda, but I had intended to leave it on our agenda until we can get where we want to be about having service recipients in our meeting and part of our group. It was one of the things I think that the policy and planning and policy councils struggled with during the audit. I know it was when the audit was going on, it was the only calls we got were about service recipients being part of the council. So I wanted to leave that on our agenda and be able to talk about that each quarterly meeting. But me being me left it off this agenda. But I do want, as Zach Blair did, talk about some statutes changing, where the statute used to say that at least a majority of each council's membership shall consist of current or former service recipients. The language has been changed to regional councils established by the department shall strive to ensure that at least a majority of each membership consists of current or former service recipients. So it was just an adjustment in the language. But I think it could help us in future audits, and I don't think that needs to take away from our efforts to identify people in our service areas that maybe we could get to join the planning and policy councils to give us more feedback on services that maybe they received or suggestions they have.
Richard?
Yes.
This is Kurt Hipple with the department.
Kurt, what's up, brother, man?
Hey, not much. How's Jackson?
Jackson's booming, dog.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I just wanted to be clear, that change has not actually happened to the statute yet. Oh. What that is a legislative proposal from the department for 2021. So that's what we're hoping to accomplish as one of our legislative proposals in 2021. It's been approved by the governor's office to be moved through the process, but we're still waiting on legislative approval from the legislature. But everything else you said is correct. That was the intent we had behind it, and really appreciate your region, regional council, and others' re-emphasis and rededication in trying to involve service recipients. Thank you.
Kurt, thanks for clearing that up. That's a biggie. I appreciate that. Okay, we'll move on. The COVID, Matt Marshall, I hate to blindside you, but I know you're real involved with the folks here that are tracking COVID. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, I mean, the big thing right now is that, as many of you have seen, you know, so far it's the last 2-3 weeks has been really positive. We've seen a decrease in the number of cases, at least from what they were. They're high, you know, just a couple months ago. As well as we've seen a decrease in the number of people, at least COVID-19 positive patients at Jackson General, as well as some of our other medical facilities across the region. So that's all positive. That's good news. We hope that those trends continue in that direction, particularly when we consider that we have, you know, kind of officially entered into flu season now. And so about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, we did see a very large number or at least a large number of patients in the high census at Jackson General. And a couple of weeks ago, we still had a number of COVID positive patients. But really, to be honest, while that census number a couple of weeks ago was higher than we would have liked to have seen, part of the reasoning for that was that you saw a return to a number of patients now having their elective surgeries, which many of you know, during many of these months, that was stalled and put off. So in a lot of ways, that's a positive. That means that we're kind of returning back to normal business at the hospital. That being said, they have still had challenges with staffing there at the hospital, and they're working hard to alleviate some of that. But you know, the other piece of this that I would say from a COVID-19 task force perspective is that we need to all continue to keep our guard up, continue to social distance, continue to wear masks, do all of those same things. While the numbers are getting better, I think part of it is those things are working. So we need to continue to do that, continue to make the jobs easier for our healthcare workers. And hopefully, you know, with the hope of vaccines coming before very long, as many of you have heard, there are vaccines in development. It is possible that some of those vaccines will be released before the end of the year. However, from everything we know, that's going to be done in stages. And so you probably won't see mass, availability until sometime after the new year. But it is possible that it will be coming down in stages before the new year. So, with those positive things on the horizon, let us just continue to do the piece, play the part that we can play, and make this easier on our healthcare workers, in the hopes that we'll get over this before too very, very long. But we're not quite out of the woods yet.
Matt, appreciate that so much. Finally, some positives that we can look to. And again, I apologize for broadsiding you with that or blindsiding you with that, but I appreciate the update. We'll skip over business, I'm sure, and come back to that. I would like to introduce Jason Postlewaite. Jason is going to talk to us about the CHI-2 program. You know, Commissioner Williams several years ago started creating Homes Initiative that brought in thousands of homes, and it was a public-private partnership to develop housing, affordable housing here in the state. It was very successful, targeted mostly those suffering with mental health issues. And then last year, expanded the CHI program to include developing housing for those suffering from substance misuse. So we were fortunate in to secure the grant from the department, and immediately started looking for somebody to fill that role. We were fortunate in that Jason had several years working with homelessness and the homeless population, and we were offered him the job. He was gracious enough to take it. He's been with us several months now in the community, building the relationships. While that ASPL has that grant, y'all, we want to emphasize, and Jason will do this in his presentation, we want to emphasize that Jason's responsibility is to work with all providers to help, you know, with its grant writing or developing resources. We encourage that. We know that's our role, is to have him housed here, but to serve the community as a whole and develop housing. So I'm going to turn it over to Jason now and let him tell you a little bit about his program. And please, if you can, he'll give you your email address. If you have some things you want to address regarding housing, let's get that done. So, Jason, I'll turn it over to you, and you go with it, dog.
Get to sit in the executive chair. thank you, Richard. As Richard said, my name is Jason Postwaite. In early 2000, the Tennessee Department of Mental Health Substance Abuse Services began to try to address the need for affordable permanent housing for people with mental illness and substance abuse. The Creating Housing Initiative, Tennessee's Creating Housing Initiative, was the initiative that was created. It was created with a proven model of strategic collaboration and assertive partnering to leverage and secure funds and resources to create and preserve safe, quality, affordable permanent housing for Tennesseans with mental illness and co-occurring disorders. Now, since early 2000, that job was held in each of our seven regions by one individual person. As Richard said, in 2020, the department secured funding to separate the mental illness side with the co-occurring side, the substance abuse side. CHI-1, Creating House Initiative 1 is CHI-1, and I'm CHI-2. CHI-1 is the mental health side. Her name is Dina Zip, and she's with Cary Counseling Center. She serves the same. Cary houses the grant, but she and I are together a lot, and we cover all 23 counties in our region. So we're really active together. I had a previous relationship where I knew her, so it's really helped me to begin to try to, and obviously, you know, this is a very, very wild time to start a new position. I started in March and went home till about June. And so, you know, we've done a lot of Zooms and those sorts of things. So the position, Creating House Initiative, is the program. The position that I service is the regional housing facilitator. And as Richard said, I'm going to go over some of the parts to it, but basically the regional housing facilitator does just that, facilitates in any way we can to create. And the big term that we have, and if you live, you know, Madison County is probably one of the bigger, maybe Union City, affordable housing is becoming harder and harder and harder to come by. Nashville, when I meet with Nashville, I just can't believe the conversations we have. I mean, affordable housing is just very little affordable housing. So one of the biggest things that we're pushing is the affordable housing side for people who really have, from my perspective, the substance abuse side. So a regional housing facilitator is a hands-on collaborator with grassroots community partners and task forces to stimulate, preserve, develop, and enhance housing options. And again, the department has been so gracious. We're not bound by any way we can help your agency. If you know of a faith-based initiative, you're talking about Monty Burke. We've done a lot of work with his group, and we're really trying to develop some relationships where we can get some faith-based initiatives going in the housing department. But our main objective is simply grant writing is what this position was described to me as. That is a part of it. But facilitation is the biggest part. However we can help your agency, that's what we're wanting to do. We're wanting to create affordable, safe housing for people with mental illness and substance use in Region 6. Affordable housing development expertise. That's just simply we try to meet with housing authority, every agency we can meet with to find out how they work, how we can create housing through those departments, through HUDs, any of the grants that come down. We just spoke about some of the COVID grants. If that money can be utilized for housing, then that's something we can look into. Thirdly, it identifies and recommends financing strategies and grants to provide support for development of permanent housing options and associated support services. One of the biggest things that we're starting to see is the department pushes the associated support services. We don't want to just house them. We want to house them in a scenario that's going to keep them permanently housed. And permanently housed could mean that they utilize the housing that one of the agencies provides, but they move out on their own. It's a wonderful success that we want. So fourthly, conducts assessments to identify current available and unmet need for permanent housing and support services. And that, again, this is just the facilitation of any permanent housing or support service that we're looking for these agencies. We help train and identify the needs. So, and then finally, grant writing is one of the positions. A lot of agencies have their own grant writing or use an agency that has grant writing. We're not bound to write the grant. There's nothing that says we have to do it. As Richard said, Aspel is my home office, but we utilize any service we can utilize in Region 6. Now, the department created, there's seven regions, so there's 14 of us now as opposed to seven. So there's a CHI-1 facilitator in every region, and there's a CHI-2 facilitator now in every region. And we've all been hired, I think, a couple of months back, we hired the seven. So we're fully staffed, and obviously with COVID, it's a different perspective. But we're doing our best to figure out the caveats of how to maneuver through these times. So with that, again, is the Creating Housing Homes Initiative. I'm the CHI-2 coordinator for Region 6. If you ever have any questions, my last name's got 12 letters, so Aspel was gracious enough to let me just be Jason. At aspelrecovery.com. So thank you very much for your time. Look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Y'all, seriously, we got involved with CHI several years ago. And over the course of the last probably 8 to 10 years, we've developed just with CHI grants, 26, 28 beds, something like that. So it's been important for our program. More importantly, it's important for the people we serve. We know, you know, people in early recovery have burned a lot of bridges, and they've made a lot of people mad, and it's, you know, maybe it's a poor work history or education. So anything we can do to help them get that solid foundation in early recovery, well, this CHI money, then CHI grants, and the affordable housing, permanent housing that goes with it, has been big for our program and the people we serve. So I encourage you, if you have some ideas, get with Jason and start processing through that. Let's see where we can go with it. We, you know, we've got a lot of housing here, but we don't have enough. We need more housing, I know, in Madison County, and I'm sure in the rural counties. We've looked at some rural counties, and it's hard to get it done in those rural counties. So if you have some ideas and you're in Weakley County or you're in Carroll County, get with Jason and let's get those fleshed out. While we're doing that, before we move on to business from the floor, what I'd like to do, y'all, it just seems like, I don't know how I wound up with the chair of this anyway, but it just seems like what we've done since I became chair is we do a committee report and another committee report and then another committee report, and then we talk a few minutes and that's a meeting. What I would like is for each one of you, or if you care to, forward to me something in your program you would like to have at a Region 6 meeting, just like we did with Jason. A few months ago, we had our pregnant and postpartum women to do a program. I would love, with the Boys Club, I know you got 1,000 programs down there that you do, and we'd love to spotlight one of them in a region meeting. Marcus, with the things y'all do with the helping with the criminal justice population and the partnerships you have, we'd love to hear more about that. So if you could forward to me some idea that you'd like to do, then I'd like to get it on the agenda for each quarterly meet. Is that cool, y'all? All right. Okay, we'll move on now to new business from the floor. Anybody got any new business? I'd like to jump here. No, he's not. Okay, well, I got no new business from the floor. Agency reports. Who wants to start us off? Leaving me out to hang. We do freeze up. I started. We actually, since we're talking about Chi money, we had applied for one of the Chi 2 grants last year. We were fortunate enough to get it funded. Then COVID hit. All those grants were suspended. Then Department of Housing, Nehru Gobind, let us know a couple of months ago that money had been released. So we broke ground on a new 12-bed permanent housing for women yesterday. So we're very grateful for the department. Dr. Vicki Lake helped us with that grant. Dina Zip helped us on the front end with care counseling. And then when we got Jason's been doing some work with us here. So we're just real grateful to be able to move that project forward. Other agency reports. I don't believe y'all hear me.
We can hear you.
All right, darling.
But good afternoon, everybody. This is Sabrina Anderson. I'm with the Boys and Girls Club of Jackson. We are doing virtual learning for students, which is a whole new ball game for us. We have students in our main facility, which is the East location, which is at 832 Lexington, across from Kellogg. We have students at Lincoln Courts and Roosevelt Parkway, kind of like the Section 8 HUD area. And then we have them at Allenton Heights, which is across from Madison Academic High School. We are open basically at 7:30 in the morning, and we're closing at 5 at night. When the teachers are on, our kids are learning virtually for most of them. Some of them that are going back to school, they have days off from school, so then we have to do what's called Clever or iReady, or they have worksheets that they have to do. I do not like being a school. I do not like that. I'm not designed for that, but we are providing a safe, structured environment. They're feeding kids breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a snack. It's completely different, let me tell you. But I'm just trying to do the best that I can. So just FYI, we're doing that on a small scale. We're keeping it like one staff member to 9 students, where ideally it would probably be 3. Not that ever handling 9 students would have been a problem, but it's just their technology issues and the questions that they have. You know, it's better one-on-one for them. So just so you know what's going on at the Boys and Girls Club, and we'll get ready for Lights On After School October the 22nd. So, happy Tuesday, everybody.
Thank you, Sabrina. Other agencies? Okay, if we don't have anything else, I do ask you to forward me you know, something in your agency you would like to have on the program for one of the quarterly meetings. We'd love to have that. Our next meeting will be, if my calendar's right, January 12th, 2021. So we can go ahead and put that on the calendar. Any other business before we adjourn?
Richard, this is Lori. I have a question for Kurt, if he is still on.
Oh, we might have lost Kurt.
Yeah.
Kurt, you still there?
I don't think he is.
No, okay. I think he's gone.
Okay. I may try to email my question to him. I also have a question about the school-based behavioral health liaisons. Who is getting that service? Does that, which counties does that include?
That includes all 95 counties. It was just expanded to every county.
Okay, so how do you, how is that working? And I don't want to take up a lot of time, but are there people already in the school system that are providing that, or do they have someone coming from like the local counseling center?
I think it really depends on the school district and the area. What I can do, Lori, if you don't mind, to send me or send me an email at kirby.fye@tn.gov. I can get you in touch with the individual who's over that program.
Okay.
Lori, I'll just jump. This is Lori Hendon from Cary Counseling Center. Lori, just to give you an update of what we have, we originally had one contract, which we were serving in Lake County at Lara Kendall School. And we, whenever the expansion happened, we applied for four additional counties, and we got those four counties. Staff is already in place or has been hired and in training for two of those positions. And then I have people identified for the other two positions that hopefully will start on November the 2nd. Our implementation with that, with the new set and the new counties, we have to be live and in the schools and ready to go come January, whenever the schools start back. Okay. And those are full-time positions in the school. They're not, you know, going and spending partial days or anything. Ours are full time. They're just, I'm going to say, like a regular staff member at the school system.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Lori, this is Kim Parker from Pathways, and we're in, with a school liaison, we're in Madison County and Crockett County and Gibson County.
Okay. So, Lori, I think, are you in Weekly? Are you all in Weekly?
We have one contract in Weekly with the liaison program, and that is in the Greenfield School.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah. We have a contract that is separate, doesn't have anything to do with the behavioral health program, but we serve all the other schools in the county, but just have a different contract. The other schools that we're in would be Obion County Central, Huntington Middle School, and Inman Middle School in Paris City. Is that all of them? Yeah, that's all of them.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
Richard, what did you say the next meeting was again in January?
January 12th, the second Tuesday of the new year. Any other business before we close? The chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. All right, raise your hand or something.
I'll make the motion.
Lori's made the motion. The second? Somebody second. Mark a second.
I'll second.
Mark a second. All right. This meeting's adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for taking time out of your day to get in here.
Thank you.
Take care.
Nice to see you all. Bye.
Bye-bye.